Here we go. We'll start. We did the Mishnah yesterday, which is Chazer over the Mishnah, bottom of Ayin Ten on Tet, and then continue with the Gemara. So the Mishnah said, Emotzi Otzot on Nechsei Yishto, someone who invests in his wife's property. Emotzi Arbe Ba'achol Kimo, if he invested a lot and his return was small. Or Kim'ah, he invested a little, Ba'achol Harbe, and he had a good return. Mashotzi Otzi, Mashachol Achol, that's the result of his investment. Right, and that is what he gets to take. He gets what he gets.
That's
right. But if he invested and then he had no return whatsoever, meaning that she divorced him in between, or they divorced in between, right? Yishba kamotzi bito. Then he gets to take back out his investment, and it seems in order to at least somewhat to prevent him from under-investing in the property, right? Because otherwise he would always be suspect of investing, because he would never know that maybe they would get divorced and he would end up losing his investment in the property. So, Rakama Kima, how much is a little? Meaning that Amarabi Asi, Hafilu Grugris Acha, even one Grugris, one dried fig. Who she'achla derech kavod? Right? That's only if he eats in a pleasant manner. Meaning that has to be not a... I don't exactly know how to define that, but it means that, you know, it's not a rush driver picked it off the tree, but that they, you know, sat down and enjoyed it. So Amar Rabbi Abba Amri Bey Afilu Shigra de Tamri. Even a bunch of dates. What are these bunch of dates? Rashi says that they're pressed down together. Dates are pressed down should dorsin. To Enim Yachad litra oat, right? Just like you press the figs together, avelu. Okay, umikri shigra, and it's called a shigra. B'nei shemati shigra are truyot, I mean eshkol tmarim, or a bunch of dates. So then Rashi points out here a question, Tosfos asks the same question, is, then maidu afilu. What is it? Afilu usually means what? You have an amount, and then the expert says afilu means less than that amount. Here they start, the first amount was a fig, right? And then they go afilu shigra the tamar. So he doesn't understand why they're going down in numbers. And then he talks about other girsos that tried to change around the girsa in the Gemara, but he says that he doesn't feel like that's right. Tosfos just answers up that he feels like it is a shigra, but he says that a shigra because they are not good quality. It's a bunch of them because each one individually wouldn't be of a good quality. So shigra de tamri is a deficient to a grugeris because a grugeris was a good quality pressed frig, whereas a shigra de tamri are low quality pressed dates. So even though generally we would see dates as being, or a bunch of dates being more valuable than a pressed fig, but in this case it won't be because this shigra somehow is deficient to as compared to a grugeris.
But if you have just a very little amount, then wouldn't the Yishova Kamahotzi Vito? I mean, just
no, because that's
what
the first half of the Mishnah was, right? That if he invested and got any return,
right,
they're trying to ask how much is a small return in order,
right,
to say that he's done. And
so that's a return over the amount, the initial investment amount?
No, that's any return whatsoever, not above his investment.
Uh-huh.
It's any return. Over there, when he's up, he invested a lot and got a little back, doesn't mean that he got his principal back necessarily. It means that he just got a tiny amount back. So how much is a tiny amount? That's what the Gemara is saying. How small an amount is already considered him receiving some sort of return that he can no longer even make a claim? So these are, you know, they were saying basically nothing. These are small, very, very small amounts. And we're going to see that in an example in the story in the Gemara. Okay. What about a chuvta tamre? That means after you've made them into beer, date beer, and the leftovers that are the dregs of the date beer, is that sufficient to be considered a return or not? So my take with there, the Gemara didn't know if that was sufficient. Lo achla derech kavod, my, didn't eat it in a coveted manner. Amar ula pligi batrei marai ber marava. They argue about it, two amarayim argue about it in the marava. What is a derech kavod? What is the amount of a derech kavod? Then it says, chad amar biki isar. Right, the amount of worth of a value of an isar, but kind of mark kichi dinar, the amount of a value of a dinar. So this derech kavod seems to be also a some sort of amount. You know, I mean that one pressed fig, but at least has to be worth the value of a dinar or an isar to be considered the achilas derech kavod. Dine de pumpedita, and the dayan of pumpedita, which is Rav Papa Bar Shmuel, Abad Rav Yehuda Abad. And then he put Abba Rav Yehuda Uvda Bechavili's Muros. So they, these guys in the Pumpadita that, by Chavile's Muros. What are Chavile's Muros? Chavile's Muros is a bundle of, twigs, bundles of twigs, small branches. Right? So I'm gonna review the Uvda Bechavile's Muros. So they had, these guys in the Pumpadita had Rav Yehuda who did a, what's in a Uvda, he had a case, Bechavile's Muros, and he said that was sufficient to be a return. Gemara says, "Rav Yehuda the Tamei." Now these aren't really so edible. These aren't such big food. So I'm Rav Yehuda. Afla arla shvisi kivayim harizei chazaka. So Gemara Baba Basra talks about the fact that a person, in order to establish a chazaka on a land, meaning that where he has a claim and then he doesn't have a shtar anymore, but he wants to say that I've lived here for 3 years, he has to eat or do something with the land for 3 years. So now, what happens if he ate arla shvisi kivayim? Now Rashi points out that he didn't.
In this case, Rav Yehuda is not that he ate it; it's that he fed it to his animals.
Right, he gave it to his animals. Right, the chavilei zmoros. Right, it's not humanly edible. He gave it to his animals. Is that sufficient to be considered a return?
There's a shame off of the feeling. So he had like a dead elephant.
Right, exactly. He had this hungry elephant. He could feed it. So it's the so here he eats orla, shvius, and kilayim, all of which are not edible foods. Now the assumption here is that he did not eat these actual items. But he ate eight items that are, right, if you look in Rashi, Afla, the word Afla in Rashi, Okeach Shnei Orla She'en Anatam Elabiz Murot. Then at Orla, where there's no value to the fruits. The fruits are Asur during Orla. So his only benefit is what? The branches, these little twigs and branches. Shapri Asur Bana, O Shvius Shu Hefker. Or yet in Shvius, where anybody could have eaten the fruits. I mean that not just him, anybody could have walked into the field and eaten the fruits. O Shazar Kilayim Vazmurot Unesru. In a case where he planted Kilayim. A Kilayim, when you have an existing plant, when you have something that's already grown, so you have a vineyard, and then you plant some grain there that will make a Kilayim, right? The additional growth afterwards becomes a sword. The original growth doesn't, so. Those others we shouldn't point out, it would be a case where the fruits grew, and therefore they became asur, but the plant itself did not grow enough to become asur. So there, in each of these cases, Rav Yehuda says that is sufficient to create a chazaka of eating there for 3 years. So Rav Yehuda, you see, says that what? Even though he's not eating fruits, even though he's not eating the pre, that the having the twigs or the branches is sufficient, considered a year of eating for the chazaka. So too over here. Branches or twigs will be sufficient for what? For him to consider having a return on the property. So, Amar Rav Yaakov, Amar Rav Chista, Hamotzi Otzotzo Nechste Ishto Ketana. What about a Ketana? What's the problem with a Ketana as opposed to a Gdola? Gdola, right? Yes, she has to get a divorce. Right? That's a process. The husband can determine. What Ketana has the right to do what? If she was married off, not by her father, but she's married off by her sister and brother, she can be Mima Enet. She could just pick up one day and say, I don't want to, right? And he wrote something. I don't want to be here anymore. So this guy's got a bigger risk than even in a normal marriage. Why? Because she could pick up and say, I don't want to be here any morning. And then what happens? He's out of his money. So, kimotzi amnichse akardak, equivalent of investing in a third party's property. If someone goes without the permission of a third party and invests in their property, then what is their, what's your right in a third party property when you invest in a third party property? Is that what? That you get to, take out what you invested. You get the shevach, keneged shevach. You get the value, keneged what you invested. So that's Gemara says, my time, or why they do. Abdu barbana takana teheched the lips the dinu. Right? They made a takana that, so this guy shouldn't lose. Again, that he would be disincented from investing in the property if he marries a kind of thing she can dump him at any second. So in order to incent him to invest in the property, they say, well, he'll be no worse, right, than somebody, what, that invests in invest in a third party property. Rashi says that kemotzi onichse acher b'mianabo. If she rejects him, shaman lo shevach sheishpiak. They assess the amount that he increased the value of the land. B'notel kemishpat arisei midinah. He takes based on the sharecropper's value in that area. So he gets a return that he's not going to be out all his money, or he's not going to be out. He'd be no worse off than he had worked with a third party in this investment. That's his. It's a very interesting case that you see from here. What they're talking about, the return, and not above the investment, but the absolute return.
But there is one negative consequence of this remedy for the katana, which is that if it all goes pear-shaped and there's an investment in the field, and he realizes that if he doesn't continue through with the marriage, he'll get all his money back.
Mm-hmm.
He might not continue through with the marriage.
But he doesn't have the choice, right?
He
can divorce her with a grushin, but then he'll be out of ksuba and out of everything else. But Mia Noah, then that's her determination. She makes that decision. Right. But you're right, she could be convinced to do it because he's that, you know, manipulated because he's at an investment. Alright, it's a talk. So this woman, Nakla Arba Mea Zuze. She got 400 zuz. She hit the lottery, and she had this big inheritance, but Beit Hozai was out in outback land in Beit Hozai. Also Gavra, Upik Shitnia. So this guy who went, her husband went ahead and what? He laid out 600 zuz to get the 400 zuz. I mean, he had to invest 600 to get back the 400. So he goes out and brings back the 400. So basically, it's bad investment. Right? He invested 600 to get the 400. Then on his way back, Itzrichlehu Chad Zuzah. He had to spend one zuz of the 400 zuz. He ran out of money, and he needed to use one of the zuz from the 400 that he went to get. The shakel minahu, and then he took out of the 400. So he comes back with 399 instead of 400. So Ato the Kamei to Rabbi Ami. So right again before Rabbi Ami, he's get reimbursed for his 600. He thinks, well, I at least keep the 400 for the investment I made in the 600. I'm like, Masha Hotzi Hotzi, Masha Akal Akal. Uh-oh, wait, you invested 600 to get the money back, but you did get a return. Why? Because you used a portion of the 400. So you got your return already. Masha Hotzi Hotzi, Masha Akal Akal, you're out of luck. I'm like, Rabbi Ami, Hani Milei, I think the Akal pay rate. That's only what it'd be some of the pay rate. Akarna Gafel. Over here, he didn't get any profits. Here, he's eating into the Karen. This was not a profits that he took from the ring. He just was taking from her Karen, which is from her principal. Botsai. It's not a, it's just an additional layout for the investment. In Cain, have a little hotzi, a little achal. Well, then it's a case of what? That he invested without any return? Yishba kam hotzi v'yito. And that he just takes a nether of how much he laid out, v'yito, and they'll take it. Now, you see, that depends what you consider the Karen, right? So in your case, if you take a field, which is the Karen, right, if he's investing in the field, then he doesn't have to get a return above his layout, right? He just has to get some sort of return from the field, which would be a fruit, any fruit. And that would already be enough, sufficient to be considered profits, and then he would not, if he ate that, then he would not be able to get back his investment. Over here it's different because the Karen is actually the money itself, the 400 zuz are the Karen, right? So therefore, if he needs to receive a return in excess of that 400 in order to get a return, because the 400 is his investment, is the basic Karen. So when he went and used a portion of the 400, he was using a portion of the principal, which was an additional investment into this 400 zuz, and therefore he hasn't gotten any return yet, as opposed to, so it'd be a little different, meaning that to us that would look like, again, to us it would look like we would always think of an investment. He puts money into the land, he has to earn a return above the money invested. That's not the way the Gemara looks at it, is that the land is always there. And so when he puts an investment in the land, as long as the land produces something, he gets something out of the land, that's his profit, that's his return. Whereas by money, this is more like we would look at money, which is what you invested, you have money, you have a certain amount of money, even though he now invested above the amount of money that he went to get, he invested 600, we still don't consider the money the return. We still consider the money as a portion of the Karen, of his investment, and therefore the returns are what he gets above that amount.
So how much then would it he needed to, over 600 before it was
considered? No, just above the 400.
So then it's a bit different because you're saying that even if he lost 199 and then he spent one and he was left with 400, then that would be considered as if he had taken?
No, wait, what did he invest in?
It has to come from the 400.
From the 400. He has to be above, and he has to earn a return above the 400.
So if he bought stock with the 400,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that if it was actually coming from.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm pointing out that the Gemara has a different view of return when it comes to land versus money. And that had to do with the way they viewed real property. Real property was viewed as the best investment, right, in the world because it was always there.
It's still there.
Right, so that it was always there, it didn't depreciate in value, and you could always generate returns out of it. So that's why versus money, where the Gemara always saw that as being something that disappears.
This is California, looks like
something. Okay. Yishma kama otzivi ito. So now he takes a neder of how much he invested, and he takes it back. Amar Avasi. V'hu yeh shiyesh shevach k'neged hotzah. That's only if what? When he comes to swear and get back his investment in the property, that's only if there is improvement in the property that what exceeds or is at least the value of his investment. He can't come also and invest in the property and then the property depreciates or deteriorates because of his investment and then come and say, oh, give me back my investment. Right? That's what you were suggesting before. He'll play a game and he'll take a shul and he'll get his money back. So he can't. You only do that based on the amount he's improved the property.
Well, in the previous case, he didn't improve anything.
By what? By the
400.
By the 400, right.
He spent 600 in order to get the 400.
Right. But he's still, right now, the 400 is still intact. He hasn't done anything with the 400 yet. He still has room to prove himself.
Right, but we already said that he can get, you know, use a combo to the Ito. He can get back his 600.
Right. Because he invested. You mean, why is that considered not connected to Sheva? Right. Why didn't he improve it? Right. That's interesting. If the improvement in the value was greater than his outlay, then he takes his outlay. Below shvua, that he will take without a shvua. People would cheat. Because what they would do is, if I have a claim against the land, what would I do? I invested in the land, and I wanted to get out without a shvua. I tell them that I invested just below the amount that they returned, the land improved. You'd always make a claim that's just below the improvement, because then you would never have to take a shvua. Because it can't be that. Elamar Rava, Shim Haita Utsa Yitera L'Sheva, if its layout was greater than the improvement, Ein Lo Utsa, then he gets Shir Sheva. He can only take out the investment, the amount of the improvement, Ubi Shavua and with the Shavua. And that his taking out of the land cannot exceed the improvements, the land improvements, leasehold improvements that he made on the land. Right, so that's the issue. I mean, that if he comes to claim back his money without because he's not getting any return, that he has to show that he can get back what he invested, but only up to the amount that he's improved the leasehold. So if he's created losses, then
only with the shvua,
right? Only with the shvua, right? Right, but that would come back to your question: is why over here Yishba v'Yito was because if he really just ate into the if he ate into the Karen, right? Why he didn't create any sheva here? He didn't create any Shevach, right? So maybe there's only a din in land that you have something where Hotzah and Shevach come together. That's interesting. It's a good question. By the way, what happens if the husband hires sharecroppers to take his place? No. A dike at the Baal Mochit, when these sharecroppers go down, are they looking themselves as replacements for the husband? If the wife throws out the husband, they're out of luck too, meaning that they're under the same rules as the husband. Oh, Zuma, they did the Aranachit, right? That they, maybe they went down based on the land, meaning they were coming to work the land, not because of who owned it. And the sharecroppers can remain, meaning that they have rights to continue working this land. So my people are Rova. Rova says, why is this any different? Someone goes down to his friend's field, and planted it without permission. And you assess it for him. And you're on the bottom end. Meaning that, what does it mean you're on the bottom end? It means that if their layouts were in excess of the returns, then they only get the return, the improvement on the land. If the layouts were below the return, they only get the layouts, meaning that they get the lesser of the improvement of the land or their investment, right? They get the lesser of the two. So this should be the same thing for the sharecroppers. They're basically working whose field now? The woman's field, because she's kicked the husband out. So they're working a third-party field. Why should it be any different than that? Tamar says, Hatam leka inish tatarach. There, nobody would have worked the field. I mean, the field was laying fallow, and this guy came and basically did him a favor in some sense by going and working his field. Okay, you could bow the Torah. Had the sharecroppers not gone down, then the husband would have done it. Right? So this would be a different situation. So why should they not just simply be a replacement for the husband and have the rights that the husband has in the land? My havi Allah, what's the din? Amar Abuna Breder of Yeshua, Chazina ni Bal Arisu, if this guy could have done it himself. Meaning that he was a, he himself was a farmer. He knew how to work the land. Right? Then, Istalik Bao, Istalik Lu. Right? If then, if the Baal gets kicked out, they get kicked out right at the same time. Because they're basically what? Coming in place of the husband, right? Ibao Lova Risu, but if the husband was not a sharecropper, Arla Rise Kaimo, then they remains with the Arisen.
They're coming in place of the husband, and he has the right to do that.
No, because they know that the husband could have done it, and they're coming to replace the husband. Right. So therefore, their rights are only as good as the husband's rights.
Well, husband,
so therefore, if the husband can be kicked out at this point, they can also be kicked out at this point. In that their rights cannot exceed those of the husband, because they know that the husband could have done it, and they're replacing him. If they're replacing him, then their rights are only up to the point of what? Of what the husband had. Whereas if the husband was unable to work the land, and they came into place, that means that they're coming to work the land, not because of the husband. They're not coming to replace the husband couldn't have done this. Then they're coming down to work the land, and their rights are as sharecroppers of land, not as replacements of
right,
the...
Right, so they've got to hire somebody.
Right, exactly. That's the point. The point is
yeah,
that...
Yeah, Rashi says that, actually.
Right, exactly. That the land would have been fallow anyway, so is what's the difference if he hires him or if the husband hires them, right? So, I mean, she hires them or he hires them. It shouldn't make a difference, right? Exactly. Ibailu, Baal Shemachor Karka Lepeiros, Mahu. Right, so now, what happens if the husband sells the land? What, for payros? Now the husband owns, we know this, and this is look, what does the husband have? The Karen remains, the principal remains with the wife. The husband owns the output of the land. So here, can he sell his rights? Whatever right he has, right, he could sell on the land.
Right,
so he could sell. So now what happens? By the way, Bosham Karkal Paris Mouth. Me, I mean Mike the Kani Akne. Right? That whatever he cunning, whatever he's gotten, he can sell. Oh, Dilma, keep taking him around a peros the Baal, or maybe the whole tukana that the husband gets peros is Mishim Raf Kabeta. It's so that he will increase the possessions of the household. I mean that he'll bring in fruits, he'll have more to eat, they'll increase the value of the household, not just his own personal profits. Right, so that's the question here. The question here is, once the husband has ownership over the production of the field, is that full ownership where he can do it as he pleases? I mean, could he sell that ownership and get money for it and be just as happy? Or does it mean that the reason they gave it to him, there's an expectation. The reason that he has rights to these payros is in order to what? To be productive for the family. Be productive for the estate, so that the woman sees some of that.
So it's more for her than it is for him.
Right, exactly. That in the end, I mean, that he will get benefit from it, but that she should see some of that benefit as well. About this Wunelo, but he cannot sell it. So Yehuda Mar Bar Mirmei Mar Mishmei the Rabba Mar Masha Asa Asui. What he did, he did. Right, that means that he could sell it. He sold it, he could sell it, that's fine. Yeah, I know. It does sound like it. It sounds like this is one. Well, I would say maybe because this was not the Ikar. That's not the Ikar reason that the Chum gave it to him. So maybe he didn't do what he was really supposed to do, but if he sells it, then it's done. The sale is a good sale. I think maybe that's why they use that Larson.
Right.
That he didn't do anything. That's not what he was given it for, and therefore he may not sell it. Amar Papa had the Yehuda Bar Mar Bermeimer of Lab Bepeiros Shemit Mar. He didn't say it explicitly. Elam Klolit Mar. They inferred it from something that he did. So interesting story. A woman got married, and in her, you know, dunya, in her dowry, she brings in what? Two maidservants. Azal Gabra. So this guy goes ahead. Nasiv Itzatachriti married a second wife. Then what does he do? He takes one of the maidservants and gives it to the second wife. So this first wife gives him with two maidservants. He goes, all right, you have one for you. I'll take the other one and give it to the new wife.
bring on
Shalabar. That day the Kameda Rava. So she comes before Rava Tzapka. She starts screaming, Laskafa. He didn't listen to her. I mean, she was screaming, these are my maidservants. What is he doing? Basically, giving them over. Now, what is, again, what are the payrolls of the maidservants? That's their, right, their work, their productivity. Right, some people who are watching why Rava didn't listen to her thought, why? Because what? Masha Asa Asui. That he's allowed to do whatever he wants with the payros. Their productivity of these maidservants are now his to use, and then he can use them. So no, he says no. The reasoning why behind the takana is what? So that the estate benefits. So that the household benefits. And here he goes, the household is still benefiting. Meaning that because she still has a maid servant to service her, and now there's someone else to service the other woman, which would have to happen to be taken care of anyway. So here, just by moving the maid servant over, he hasn't changed the family dynamic. He's only, they're still being used in productivity that affects the household as a whole. It may not be her in particular, but the household as a whole.
Or if you were just assuming in general that, you know, they're just doing cooking, she's doing cleaning, she's doing selling, whatever needs to be done.
Right.
So it's still, you know, it's still for the benefit of the, I mean, you're assuming that she's like her personal,
right. The rest of it is, she still didn't, like you're saying, let's talk advice. Right? She's still cooking, cleaning. It happens to be that it's someone else is benefiting from it, but it's still part of the household. There's another woman now has become part of the household, and therefore that's still being considered being using the productivity towards the household's gain. I don't know if we would have thought of it that way, but that's what folks said. The help is
a communist kind of idea,
right?
People don't have feelings.
Right.
It's still the needs of the household.
Right, and that we believe the household is great, like there's a greater household. That there's not, it's not necessarily her personal household, it's the greater household that we're looking at here. Alright, Hilka, so what's the luck? Bal shemacho karka l'peiros, husband who sells the property for its output, lo asav lo klum, that does not work. My time, bayamar, hashinu shema tichsif. This is an interesting thing. Abai says, why don't we let him do this? Because what? We're afraid that the buyer will not invest properly in the property. Right, Rav Amar Mishum Revach Peitam. Rav says it's a failure because what? He's not improving the household. Samar says, Mai Benayu. What's the difference between these two reasonings? Tikim Benayu Ara Demikar Vlamato. One is what? If the field is right near the city. Because then they can always watch over and see if this guy's investing or not. Meaning that they can check up on the property. So if it's a faraway property and they sell it off, then what? We have no idea if the other person is investing properly in the property. Here, you could see whether he's investing in the property, but it still is not beneficial to the what? To the household, right?
So why do we make the assumption that the buyer won't invest in it? Shouldn't we make the other assumption that if he's buying it, he's buying it as an investment, and by default, if he just spent money, the default should be that he will.
Right, but he thinks he doesn't know. I mean, Rashi says if he looks at Rashi, well, this will read Rashi. Is Shema Shachsit a sud that he'll maybe let it rot? Why shlo yuchos shalokeach lezavlum taiva? He won't invest for the long term in the property, not for this year, because sever lemacher nafkat minai, because he thinks he'll lose it tomorrow. I mean, you have a difference between a renter and a buyer, right? I mean, a renter thinks, you know what? All right, so this breaks. He doesn't have a vested interest in the long term value or sustenance of the house. Because he thinks I'm out of here in a year, I'm out of here in 2 years, right? Versus someone who's going to be there for the duration thinks about making an investment that has long-term benefits, but then not no short-term benefits. So that's what they're trying. They're trying to make sure that the long-term value of the land is maintained, not just that somebody gets massive production out of it for 1 to 2 years. Right.
Right.
The husband has the other investment.
He could end up being the
actual
owner. If she predeceases him, it'll be his carcass.
So he has the best interest in looking in the long term.
So how does this work? So if he sells, we say that he sells the field, so I mean, he's selling the
output,
the
production. He could sell.
For how long? What does that mean?
I don't know. Till either he dies or they're divorced. So they know that there's this event.
That's why.
He's no idea when he's going to get up the land, right?
Yeah. He knows it's not going to be forever.
Right. Right. He never, or even if he's paying, truthfully, even if he's paying per year, not that he got a lump sum to do it, but he's paying on a rental basis, he has no idea when the rent's going to be, rental will terminate. He still doesn't know when.
It's not going to be renewed to the new
place. Right. He doesn't know if the lease will be renewed, right. The other one is where the husband is a, but it was a farmer, Bal Arisu, and therefore what? That I didn't understand this. So the Rashi says, "Komash notin lo keach peyos muzumanim." He gave him, ready fruits. Meaning that it sounds like the field was already invested in, and therefore they're talking about either harvesting or taking off the production from the field. So it sounds like what? That the husband already made the investments in the field, or they already booked it out for the long term. And here it's just a question of getting the fruits off the land. And there, he's not. You can't do that much damage, right? When he's taking it off. That's what it sounds like to me. I wasn't exactly sure. Inami Zuzei Vekavi Beliskas. This is an interesting twist. What I thought about is what happens if he's a business guy? He's an investor. Alright, so now maybe he is better off with money than he is with the field. If he's a good investor, right, then if he sells off the payrolls, then he can invest that for money and his returns will be higher and that will be Rav for the Besa. So there is it, right? So the Gemara sees a possibility that Rav for the Besa could be increased where the person has some way to invest the money that he's getting out of the property. So maybe there is a value to selling off the payrolls, the production of the field, and then taking that money, investing it somewhere else. And therefore, that would be wrapped up at the Mesa, but not a worry about Shema Texif, right? We won't worry about it. So again, these will be nafkaminos between these two different opinions about whether the husband can sell or not sell, depending on what you think the reason is. Right. Now this next Mishnah is a very long Mishnah. It's a Mishnah that also shows up in Yevamos. Right? It's a difficult Mishnah. I'll just say that to start with. We'll read through it. A lot of this stuff won't be explained until the Gemara, but we'll just try to get the general concepts down now. And you should know that the Gemara reads differently. The Mishnah reads slightly differently than it does in Yevamos. So we have to... Alright, Shomeret Yavam. Shnapula Nechassim. What happens? A woman who's waiting, right? She's now... Her husband passed away. And what? She has no children. So now she's waiting to have Yibum performed. Right now, what happens if the woman passes away? Just for the sake. If the woman passes away, who would inherit her here? Right? Her children are not going to inherit her. She has no children. Because, right? That's why she has to perform Yibum here. Right? So her children are having, then what? Her father would inherit her, right? So that's it. Her father's not alive, then the Yorshe'ah, the father's Yorshe would inherit her. Right? So that's one possibility, right? Or the other possibility is that she's married somehow to the first guy. Then when she dies, right, then it really belonged to her first husband. Right? And her first husband is dead now without any children, so it'll belong to Yorshe'ah Ba'al, to his inheritors. Right, so that's the question here. What's going to happen? So now, Shomer Yom, Shnapel in the question, that if she gets property that fell to her while she's waiting for Yibum, Moli Mishnah Vesel, Shemacher Benotene Vekayam. Right, she's not married enough to her Miyabeim, right, in order for him to say, to put it like, it's not like it's, she's an Arusa or an Asua in some sense where he had questions about her ability to transact. She is in waiting, and therefore she's allowed to transact in those properties. Meta. Now what happens if she dies? What do we do with the her ksuba and the property that goes in and out with her? What is property that goes in and out with her? Those are nixei melot, right? Because that's property that she takes in and then she gets back at the end. So now, what happens to that property? Beishami omim yecholku or yecholku. They'll divide it. Yorshe Ba'al and Yorshe Av. We don't know. We have a suffix now. Who does it belong to when she passes away? Does it belong to her original husband? Or does it belong to her father? So, since we don't know, it's mamon amutzav b'suffix. Let's divide it up. They're each muksav somehow in it. They'll get half and half. So, Amri, nechashim b'chezkatam. The nechashim stay where they belong, with whoever is holding them right now. So where is Nechassim Chazkatam? If you look in Rashi, Rashi says, Bezulim Nechassim. Nechassim are Tzon U Barzel. Right? Tzon U Barzel are what? Well, those are properties that, or items that were brought into the marriage that were assessed in value when they came in, and now the value needs to be repaid. Not the actual item, but the value must be repaid at the end. So that is what, who are, the Gemara in Bava Basra discusses who's holding them. That whether it's Machlokas Amoraim there, whose Chazaka they're in. But anyway, Netzke Tzon U Barzel and somebody's Chazaka. Uketuba, the Cheskes Yosheh Ba'al. the ksuba is held by the yosher bal. Why? Who holds the money now that's going to pay the ksuba? The money to pay the ksuba sitting with the husband, right? Or the husband, or was the husband's property. Since they were a property that they only had rights to in terms of production, not to the actual Karen, then they were still her property at the time. They're going to belong to the father. So as Beis Shammai sees what? Sees that there's the property is all in the Safek, right? It's all in doubt. And therefore we're going to divide it between the Yorshei Av and the Yorshei Abau, just 50-50. Beis says no, that there, if you, it depends how you look at the properties here. Each property has a is in a chazak or is really more, I guess, more in the possession of one of the two parties, right? So if you look at the ksuba, where's the ksuba? The ksuba is really with the baal, because the baal has to pay it out. So it means that where it really is right now is with the baal. So that would be in his chazak, but we're not going to go motzi b'chaver l'avaraya. Whereas what? The nifsei malug will really belong to the woman or to the father's family, because they have property that he didn't, the husband only had rights to production, not to the actual land. Nixay Tzon and Barzel, that's what Rashi says, Bichas Katan is a machlokus between in Amorai, right? Whether it really is better, more belongs to the husband or to the, or to the Av, to the Yorshei Av. I will note here, Rashi, there's a long Tosos here that rejects, possibly rejects Rashi's shot, that this is the same Cheskatan that's found in Yuvamot, and he deals with it differently. I just pointed out it's complicated. Right, but then the next line is that they're because of Yoshe Av, right? I mean, the mission is both sides.
So
it's there's uncertainty,
is,
right?
Is it elaborating on the original statement?
Right. So in Babas, in other places, discusses it as Machlokas Amorai, what that means, exactly what the point is. It's unclear. It's a non-defined term, right? And so then how do you define that term? Okay. Alright, next, Heniach Achiv Ma'ot. Right, what happens if his brother, meaning that the deceased husband, left money? Then the new husband, the Yavim, takes that money and then what? Buys with it land, and then he eats the profits from that land. Peros atzlushim min hakarka, if it has property that's detached, meaning metal claim, these are fruits that are detached from the ground, you buy property of them, and then you eat, then you eat the peros from them. So in all of these cases, right, the suba, her suba, has a lien on the original property. So in order to preserve the original property, if it's land, then it's not being preserved. But if it's metal claim, how do we preserve it? We preserve it by buying land with that property so that there's something that is there to sustain her ksuba.
Is that her ksuba, or is that the fact that, that if he predeceases her and she inherits the...
Right, but she technically doesn't own any of this stuff because... But her husband, if the Miyavim comes and performs Yibum here, he takes over ownership of all her, his brother's property, meaning that he becomes the Yoresh of his brother's property. So therefore, he would become the full owner of that property.
She's not bringing it in.
Right.
It's not.
It could be next thing a little production from her next thing a little. Like, say, Paris Occlusion. Could be that it was her property that had production, and now it was harvested, and the fruits are sitting there. So technically, it does belong to her original husband.
Right.
But so now, when the second husband, meaning his brother, comes to marry her, does he get that? No. So we say, no, that we have to preserve all the property because she has a ksuba as a lien on it. You'll see it in Rashi. If you want to look at Rashi quickly, we can do this. Yikachman karka. Lefisha ktuba nixay balar rishon. Her ksuba is on her first husband's possessions. Ketan of the command. Lefikach nixay ames akra'i l'ktuba. All of the possessions of the original husband are mortgaged to her ksuba. Elshay yavam ochel peros. Right, the Yavam eats the what? The production of them. Im Yavin Ota. Sarva Matalti Mishabde Lituba. And he believes, obviously, this part of the Brisha, this kind of believes that Matalti and Mishuba are mortgaged to the Suba. So Mechubarim Lakarka, we just had this earlier in our Gemara, read down. But if they're still attached, what happens to the fruits that are still attached to lands? Amar Rabbi Meir, we saw the suggestion from Meir before. Shomerato, come in, you up in the Paris, come in, you up in below Paris. You assess the value of the property with fruits on them, without fruits on them. Bamboto, you kakwayam karba, we'll call Paris. The differential becomes production of the land. And therefore, they're mortgaged to the but to the ksuba, and therefore you buy land with them in order to preserve the value. No, that the peros that are attached to the land become like him. They're like land, and therefore when he takes over the land, he gets what? He gets the production of the land. So anything that is land, then what? He'll get the production afterwards.
Are we saying the common production? Is that only after he does Yibum?
Yes. He would have to perform Yibum to get them, yeah. That's correct. I mean, to get the production of the land, he'd have to perform Yibum, yes. Alright. Atzlushin min akarka, or she has to die, right? That's the other possibility, because then you come back to what we had before. Alright. Atzlushin min akarka, those that are separated from the land, kol hakodim zachu behen. And the first one to get them, gets them. So I says, now Rashi's pointing out that at this point in the Gemara, this Tana believes that the Talpulim are not Meshuba to the Yiksuba. This Tana's got to believe. The earlier Tana, we talked about that the Talpulim are Meshuba, that any freestanding non-real property automatically are sold to fulfill the mortgage on the Yiksuba, meaning to maintain the value of the mortgage of the property. This Tana clearly believes that the Talpulim are not Shayach to the Yiksuba, because what? He's allowing anybody to take them. Meaning that if there was a mortgage on there or there were some rights to them, then they wouldn't have those, they wouldn't be able to do that. Here he sounds like the Hefker. If he came first, then he just takes them like metalquin, and it's fine. Kadmahi, if she got them, then what? You look after them, karkable kopera. So how do we preserve her value if she got metalquin? You buy land, then he can eat the value. Kansa. Now, if he takes her in, meaning that he marries her, how do you eat the whole dava? She becomes a full wife to him. Right? Bilbah, she takes two batal, next day, bala rishon. The only issue is what? That the ksuba is on her original husband's property. Meaning that the lien or the mortgage of her ksuba is on what? Is on her original husband's possessions. Lo yomar la hari ktubatech, when yechat al shulchan, right? He can't say, oh, here, this is the value of your ksuba, and, you know, that's it. I don't have to worry about a ksuba anymore. Because what's the whole point of a ksuba? Ksuba is to prevent the man from just willy-nilly divorcing his wife, right? But if, what happens, if he's able to say, look, oh, here's your previous husband's property's worth 200, take this, and you know what? We'll put this in, this is an escrow for you, for your ksuba, as soon as I decide, that's gone. Because then what? He's not going to have any disincentive from divorcing her. Ella, what? All the property is mortgaged to the ksuba, and therefore, when he does it, she can, you know, I mean, she has rights to all the property.
But Kohen Gadol was only the chassam that he inherited.
But Kohen Gadol is about when the first husband died, and then when Talpa
was there. Oh, yeah. Kohen Gadol was the ksuba.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Kohen Gadol, she made.
About him, you know, not his properties, but all the properties of the original husband are mortgaged to this, and therefore what? Therefore, he still has a disincentive from divorcing her, because she could grab any property then, or she could take any property. He doesn't know which properties to leave out. Right? I mean, he doesn't know what to do. He can't, again, a regular husband to a wife shouldn't do this, because what he'll do is say, oh, here's your property for your ksuba, and then he won't invest in it, he'll let it rot, and then when he divorces her, it'll go, and he won't care. But Ella, call the chasav achrayim the tubata. All his possessions are mortgaged to the ksuba, therefore he what? He has an incentive to maintain all the properties, because he never knows which property is going to be take it. Girsha, if he divorces that, in la ktuba, right? Then she only has a ktuba. Akzira, he could call an ashim, the in la ktuba, ila ktuba, bavat. Right? So then, if she, which has to be explained in the Gemara, right, that if she, once she gets divorced, then she only has the value of her ksuba. I mean, that it's not like she owns all the land that her husband, first husband had. I mean, that when she gets divorced, she's entitled to whatever is written in her ksuba, not to inherit her first husband.
Whatever it takes from the inheritance to cover that.
Exactly. I mean, that it's the second husband inherited the land, and he's now the full owner. It's just a question of how much it takes to fulfill her ksuba. All right, so that's what she gets. Anyway, ksuba, zira, if he returns her, meaning he divorces her and then returns her, then she's like any other word, main lalik ksuba bivai. Again, then she only has her regular ksuba. And what does that teach you? I mean, the question is, what does that mean? And we'll have to do that in the Gemara. Right? We'll do one quick line, just a couple quick lines.
If he divorces her and marries her the second time, so now he's not marrying her as the Yavama.
Right.
He's marrying her as a. So does the original Ksuba.
Alright, so that's the Gemara's question. Like, exactly. What was this line of the Mishnah doing? What is this? What is the Mishnah adding over here? Does she become. Is it based on her original. When a person gets remarried, they remarry based on the original Ksuba? Meaning that they think about, like, the divorce and remarriage is premised on that first Ksuba? Or is it now like a new marriage, a totally new marriage, and you have to have a new Ksuba, and then the Ksuba, the new mortgage starts over? That's a good. that's the question. Who's responsible to bury her? Why? Because we saw in the Mishnah that different parties have rights to certain parts of her property. Which of those rights obligates them to bury her? Right, so that's it. Yerushabal Kari Lo Dekar Yartik Tuba. Right, maybe the inheritors of the husband should bury her. Why? Because they get the ksuba. Otilma Yerushab Kari Lo Dekar Yartik Nechasim and Nechasim and Yotima. They get the Nechse Melug. So maybe they should be. So I'm Avram Kashma, the Tanya, we have a price. Shemes Yabam Shemeta, Yersheha, Yersheikh Tubata, Kayavim Tubata. Her inheritors, I mean the inheritors of ksuba, who are her inheritors? The inheritors of ksuba are, were prior to burying her. Right, you know what, we'll stop here, even though the Gemara continues, probably a good place to stop, and we'll review this tomorrow.